Welcome back. I'm Ismail Akhirin. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be in your company. Today is the first time in about 5 weeks that I've left the house, and I'm sure that there are very many people who have serious cabin fever by now. These are difficult times by all of us, for all of us. And one of the biggest challenges we face is a challenge to the economy. You know, there is a false binary that's been doing the rounds in the U.S. And around the world. Is do you save the economy or do you save the people? Where should government focus? But I think it's a false binary. Right now, I want to we can turn to a letter from 76 economists who says that government can do more to limit the economic harm of COVID-19. We have our guests this evening, Lumkile Mondi, a senior lecturer at the School of Economic and Business Science at Wits University, and Dick Forsland, who is economist and researcher at Alternative Information and Development Center. So let me introduce first Lumkile. Good evening, Lumkile.
Good evening, Ismail, and to your listeners. Thanks for having me.
How are you, brother? It's been a while.
I'm trying to cope with the challenge of not physically rubbing shoulders with you and many other South Africans.
It's been a very tough. It's okay. I know you don't like me. It's fine. Look, you know, I'm not going to read the entire letter. It's a long letter. But can you give us a summary of what it is that the seven economists have said? And let me just remind our listeners that, you know, this is your Cape Talk, and we want you to be part of the conversation. And you can call us at 021-446-0567, drop us a WhatsApp message, a voice or text message at 072-567-1567. So we have on the line Lumkile Mondi, a senior lecturer at the School of Economics and Business Science at Wits University. Lumkile, what is the essence of this letter that that these economists sent to the government?
So the biggest issue that we had, given the high levels of unemployment in South Africa, poverty, as well as widening inequality, was if we are locking our society down, then we need to ensure that we can support our households and communities. Secondly, because some of those that are employed tend to feed a number of families, what people refer to as black tax, that those that are employed in the lockdown are also protected. So they help protecting workers. Also in the process, because in South Africa, the vulnerable as well as the weak work in what you call outsourced businesses. And those businesses, in fact, are most vulnerable when the bigger players can absorb pandemic and shocks.
Right.
Therefore, we expected government to also sustain those businesses through support. And lastly, of course, strengthen the public health services, because as we're saying earlier, that is where the biggest weakness has been in the past 26 years. And with the pandemic, we think we need to make sure that we strengthen it and support those in the front line, as we're saying earlier, around the conditions, the PPE, the salaries, so that we can sustain the health and the livelihoods of many people due to the pandemic. And of course, the biggest one is to strengthen the economy going forward, because as we're foregoing quite a huge knock on the economy, we need to ensure that post this crisis, the economy can kickstart and being able to really create opportunities again, so that you can create a new, inclusive and developing economy for everyone.
Lumkile, one of the things that has amazed me about this businesses going out of business, corporations, are these, you know. In my simple mind now, I'm a political economist and all the rest of that. But in my simple mind, I save for a rainy day. You know, because you never know when a crisis will hit. So you ask yourself, how come so many companies have gone bust so quickly? What about long-term projections? I mean, you get countries like, we don't have to go down that route. A company like Jeff Bezos. Has so much money. He has so much personal money. He can probably pay his workers for a year and not feel a pinch. So how do we explain this very sudden and abrupt bankruptcies? Because there's going to be a flood of bankruptcies, and we can be sure of that.
So this pandemic, Ismail, is quite systemic. Systemic in the sense that it hits your debtors. So those that owe you cannot be able to pay you back. Mm-hmm. You, creditors, you can't pay those that are owing. The workers become quite part of that as well.
Right.
So we can sustain workers without an inflow of cash for some time, not for a longer period,
right,
because you don't have certainty as to how long the pandemic is. So if we knew that in December 2020, we'll have a vaccine, so many of these entrepreneurs, who still have lots of cash, will put their money in and say, you know what, for the next 7 months, we're going to put so many millions of our business and support our business and our workers. But because there's so much uncertainty, so people do what we call cutting their losses. They say, you know what, we're going to carry on for 3 months. After that, because everything in the future is unknown, we'll have to cut our losses and tighten our own belt and plan to do whatever we can post the crisis. So this pandemic is sending what we've been critical of, the short-termism. So the short-termism that we're talking about before the crisis, around how mainly companies as well as CEOs behave by not investing, by chasing the share price and being paid huge bonuses,
right,
is now manifesting itself differently in the short-termism of saying, you know what, there's no future, so let me look for 3 months. After 3 months, I'm going to cut my losses. So it's a behavior that's been there, but the pandemic now, because it's much more uncertain than the period where they will know much in advance whether they will have profits, and some of them will jump quickly when they know that the future is not bad, the outlook is very poor, and join another company. So that behavior is now showing itself in the pandemic by people also doing the same, saying that we're not going to invest for or sustain workers for the next 7 months, but we'll just basically buy it for 3 months. After we shut shop, that's the problem. The pandemic.
Lumkila, just I want to stay on the line. I also want to welcome Dr. Dick Forsland, who's an economist. Dr. Forsen, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening, Ismail. Good evening to you, Lumkila.
Good evening, Dick. Nice to have you.
Yeah. I put the question to Lumkila earlier, Dr. Forsen, that, he rightfully described it as short-termism. What I'm surprised by is how suddenly companies have gone bankrupt or out of business, and how because my view on people usually ask me for financial advice. They say, oh yeah, you have a doctorate in all these things in economics and political economy, and then I usually say, I have only one set of advice for you: if you have money, save it. Because I don't know. I can't give financial advice. So I look at companies and I go, why haven't they built up social buffers that can help mitigate the impact of this?
No, I think when it comes to sort of a majority of small and medium-sized companies, I think a majority of them are heavily indebted to banks, or at least indebted to banks. Plus, also they have to pay, if you have a shop owner or whatever premises you are doing your sort of doing your production or your sales and so on. You have a landlord you must pay rent to, I mean, dramatic times demand dramatic measures. And what would be needed would be for the government to intervene in the relation between the big banks and all the small companies or medium-sized companies that they have lent money to, and say that it will now be, you have to increase your interest rate to zero, you have to sort of have a payment holiday of 12 months and so on. But because I think that this pandemic, it will, if one reads the interviews with experts and so on, you need to have a vaccine before this is over.
That's absolutely correct.
And when it comes to the banks, I mean, it wouldn't hurt any poor fellow. You remember maybe that a committee in the Reserve Bank asked the big banks, APSA, Standard Bank, Nedbank, not to sort of distribute any dividends now in April.
Right.
But they did. They distributed dividends of over $17 billion to the shareholders. So, I mean, they can very much afford not to demand payment of all these small, the loans they have given to small and medium-sized companies, because I think that is the situation where these companies are. But, I mean, even when it comes to the big corporate world, that has been a concern internationally, that even companies like Apple or all these Microsoft and so on, they also tend to be quite heavily indebted because they have been making money very much of taking loans and then lending out even more, making money by lending out money. And that money in the beginning also was borrowed from someone else. So even there, there's a fear of crash down coming now.
Right.
So I think that you have to intervene decisively in the private sector to stop a chain reaction.
So how do we, what advice would you, Lumke, let's take you first, you know, because what advice would you give the government at this stage with the with respect to, and I'm just going to use the language that's out there with lifting the lockdown, opening the economy, stage lifting. What advice would you give the government, and what do you think is most workable?
Ismail, I think what's workable is the transference of the risk back to employers.
Mm.
So we've seen with the level four that the miners particularly have introduced their own risk management processes, from sanitizing, testing, and ensuring that the workplace environment is sanitized and employees are able to work and be productive. So I think this signal and the behavior that we've seen so far of those that have gone back to work is what needs to be replicated in other areas so that you can go down to level three or to level two eventually by transferring the risk and responsibility back to the employer and ensuring that employees and trade unions, for that matter, where the workers are unionized, right, they hold management to account that all those processes have been done and that workers are protected to perform their work, that they're not being thrown in to be infected and then eventually find themselves unproductive and sometimes dying in the process.
Right, Dick, let me ask you this: at the top of the at the start of this conversation, I said that it was a false binary. Whether we, you know, you either save the economy or you save the people. I still think that we can do both. It depends on, you know, what are the risks we're prepared to take. Now, having said that, what would be the way forward? What do you think would be the way forward for us?
Well, I think that the lives of people comes before, of course, the so-called economy, because the economy, the livelihood of people it should serve the people. So you can't have the people serving the economy by sort of letting 0.5% of the workforce or 1% be put at risk and maybe be killed.
Right.
So, but I mean, in a situation where you are blocking production in many sites and blocking the income of people, well, then you have to leave. You have to survive on the stockpiles for a while. It's evident. So,
right.
So, but you can't, for a majority of people, for the vast majority in this situation now, either they are breadwinners or serving other people or they have a job, and of course, you can't have them be kept in lockdown and then not provide them with an income. That is impossible. You have to see to that people, first comes food in any economy, and right. you have to make sure that people can eat.
That's
so, and there's no and to do that well, you have to take decisions which, I mean, you have to take dramatic decisions. And the problem is, of course, that, you know, in a class society, a very strict and hard class society like South Africa, resources are controlled and guarded by a very powerful minority.
Right.
And that's why we haven't made so much progress as we would have right. liked to make during the last. So, but you have to go into their control over wealth, financial wealth, and so on, in order to make majority to provide a majority with an income.
Right.
And there it's a choice for the government to make. And also, when it comes to employment, I mean, some employment has become much, much more shown to be a very necessary in this situation. So the community health workers, for example, they have a key role now, but the state has outsourced them to NGOs for the last decade or something. Well, now is the time for even the mainstream or neoliberal economists to rediscover the government and the state.
That's correct.
And you should, now is the time to re-employ these people on a proper wage and with proper conditions and so on, and recognize that they are absolutely essential for the survival of the people. So I hope that we come out from this situation with a stronger public sector, and where the role of the public sector as a for non-profit essential sort of structure in the economy is recognized by the government. But we will see, because we have the Treasury right now, which has the opposite opinion. I mean, and the finance minister is for a trip where he wants the public sector really to decrease as a share of the whole economy. So,
Dick, thank you.
It's a political struggle.
Before I let you guys go, thank you very much. I just want to thank you, Lumkile and Dick Forsland, for your views on this. Yeah, the letter that was sent to the state, and, you know, let me just give you my view on this very briefly before I let you go, is, you know, people talk about the economy, people talk about the market. Now, in both cases, if you have, this is the problem that, you know, from my perspective, if you start thinking of the economy or economics as a science like physics, which is spurious, is you can't talk about an economy if there are no people. You can't talk about the market if there are no people. You know, the market, what is the market? The market is those millions of transactions between individuals, groups of individuals, the production, consumption, distribution. So people, we should not lose sight of that. So I want to thank you guys for your views, and I really appreciate you coming online to share with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.